Welcome to A Crime Cast by Revamp. Thank you so much for listening. Revamp is a nonprofit 501c3 based out of Fort Smith, Arkansas. You can catch us on our website at www.rememberEveryVictim.com or on Facebook at Revamp, which stands for Remember Every Victim and Missing Person. We'll tell you more about Revamp at the end of the Crime Cast, but we're going to dive right in because this is a continuation of our last Crime Cast, which was titled Alvin, Jerry, and the Kidnapping. And if you missed that one, you probably should go back and listen to it because we talk a lot about Alvin and how he met Jerry and a kidnapping that happened in 1995 in Sebastian County, Arkansas, which is where Fort Smith, Arkansas is situated. Let me give you a brief history of Alvin. He grew up in Sequoia County, Oklahoma, which is right across the Arkansas-Oklahoma state line from Fort Smith, Arkansas. And Alvin had a very disruptive childhood. His father left when he was a child, very small, and when he was about 8 years old, the sheriff came to the house and informed him and his mother that his father had been shot and killed. Now, his father had remarried and had a new wife and lived out in the Hugo Antlers, Oklahoma area. And that's where he lived when he was killed. It was a bar brawl, and he got pretty rowdy. But it obviously affected Alvin pretty seriously. So in 1963, after having committed several probably petty crimes, but in 1963, he and two other guys went on a crime spree across Oklahoma. And they did armed robberies from Salisaw all the way to Muskogee, Oklahoma. And they ended up in Shakota. They broke into a woman's house. They raped her and assaulted her and terrorized her and her small children all night long. Then they fled in her car. They ended up in Mason, Texas, where they were arrested and brought back and charged with the crimes. He was sentenced to prison. And in prison, he writes a lot about it in some of his manifestos and some of his writings that we obtained when we searched his house. And he talks about that he was a baker and a chef. He was in McAllister, Oklahoma. He was in Stringtown. He was in Hodges. But he also got a certificate in welding and claimed to be a welder the rest of his life. In one of his writings, he talks about the time that when he was a child, he was stabbed so severely, they rushed him to the hospital and they ended up having to take him by ambulance from the Salisaw, Oklahoma hospital to a larger hospital in Fort Smith, where he remained for quite some time because the stab wounds were so severe. Then later, his mother married the half-brother of the young man that stabbed him. And that didn't sit well with Alvin. And so they set up this whole elaborate plan that they were going to get even with him, and his mother and grandmother were, or his mother and grandfather were involved in it. Now I have Christy here, who is also one of our team members for Revamp, and she's worked on this case right side beside all of the rest of us. And Christy, would you like to kind of go over some of the mysterious deaths?
Yes, Patty. Alvin had a very rough childhood, you know, with the death of his father at a young age, his father leaving at an even younger age, and just all of the violence that was, you know, surrounding him. There seems to be a lot of house fires that went along with his childhood, and that seems to be a stem off of his mother. She would, you know, ask him to go burn a house down for whatever reason. We're not really sure on the whole story, you know, with that, but there was definitely a lot of house fires that surrounded him in his early life. And his later life as well. But with his mother, there were at least three homes that she, you know, came into possession of in awkward circumstances. There was a neighbor's house when he was young over in Oklahoma. We don't have a whole lot of information on that one. But there was one in Arkoma where she had befriended an elderly lady, would, you know, take meals and try to help her out and stuff. And that lady mysteriously passed away in the middle of the night. And the reason on that we can find was that her box fan fell over. And she passed away from a heat stroke in the middle of the night because her box fan fell over and wasn't blowing air around the room. Now that is just very mysterious to me. I'm not sure, you know, if it was just a really hot summer. I can't remember what time of year that happened in, but that was very, very mysterious. And then there was another one that was actually right next door to Alvin's mother's house over in Fort Smith, and this was another elderly, it was a gentleman, elderly gentleman. She befriended him, He was alone. I don't think he had, any family that came to visit or anything like that. So, again, she befriended him, took meals over there, would go and sit with him. And after she befriended him, he started getting more and more sick and then eventually passed away. And both of these people, for some reason, signed their homes over to Alvin's mother. It's just a very weird situation. I'm not really sure how many more there are that we don't even know about. There's just a lot of mysterious things that happened in that family. Now, one of the ones, when he was young, that caught on fire, he had a dream, supposedly, that there was some buried treasure under the porch. And then that house caught on fire, and I'm not sure how, his mother came into possession of that property, but they supposedly did find some treasure underneath that porch. So there was just a lot of weird things that his mother had him do. Well, I'm pretty sure that's stemmed part of his being on the wrong side of the law, because that's pretty much the way he grew up, was doing things that were not okay, not right. So it's a very, very sad story. Maybe if he had grown up different, he wouldn't have been the kind of man he was, but he was a very, very bad man.
So Christy, yes, there was some really strange things that happened. Now, the lady in Arcoma, we did go back and check the weather for that night. And even though it was the midst of summer and it was a really hot summer, that night the temperatures dropped down to the upper 70s. So it's still kind of a mystery on that one. Now, the man that lived next door, it was said that she cooked for him and doted over him. And yet she never cooked for her children. She never cooked for her own family. She was not one to be known to cook. But he died, and so did his five little dogs. Immediately after his death, they just all got sick and died too. Let's just kind of look at a vague timeline on this man. So he gets out of prison. He never really keeps a job for any length of time. Now, in 1978, he's associated with the death of a murder of a woman in Sequoia County, Oklahoma. And in 1978, he shoots his sister's boyfriend in the foot. In 1979, he's a suspect in two homicides, one in July of 79 and one in September of 79. And then in 1980, he and another man, a guy from Hackett, attack a young woman, brutally rape her, beat her, douse her in gasoline. And fortunately, she was able to run out in the street and collapse and get help. And then in 1981 to 85, he claims he lived in Tulsa, but in 1983, he's the last person seen with a woman from Fort Smith, and her body is later found over on Blue Mouse Road. Now, in 1990, he meets up with Jerry. In 1995, there's the kidnapping. In 96, a tornado happens, and then he and Jerry do a lot of things. They work together. The tornado comes through Fort Smith and does a lot of damage, and they're working for a construction company that does repairs. And then in 2006, there's another attack on a woman between him and Jerry. They pick a woman up at the bus station. She's brutally raped and attacked, and fortunately there was a distraction and she gets away. In 2006, Alvin's living with a man that's now in the Sebastian County Jail for murder. And then in 2007, he's associated with a woman that goes missing in Fort Smith, Arkansas. And then in 2008, that woman's body is found, and his friend Jerry's dead. So there's a lot. But let's go back and talk about some of the writings. Now, we found a lot of writings in his house when we searched it. And you were right along there beside us every time. In fact, you actually went more than the rest of us on the searches. But a lot of his writings. Now, he had this manifesto that he claimed was his life story. And I find that that's probably the most interesting writing that we found. So let's talk about the manifesto, shall we?
Oh, that manifesto. You and I had the privilege, if you want to call it that, to transcribe it, because his handwriting was very difficult to read. But it is, I don't even remember how many pages it is, but it was his life, and I really believe that there's another one out there with the, more recent events, if you want to call it that, on there. But I mean, that manifesto talks about, his early time in prison and all those things, and how he used to be a boxer and, would get into fights and win money, just basically a rundown of his life. His psychic visions, he believed he was a psychic and had all sorts of visions, and then also the, premonitions that he would call in to police and stuff like that. But that manifesto is it's a really big piece of this case, I believe, at least for the early part of his life, because it kind of showed us what kind of person he was, what he went out and did, and even, fessed up to everything that he did back then. It's a very interesting read, I can tell you that much. Transcribing that was pretty difficult, and it took us, I believe, about a week to get it done. That's a very neat thing that we finally got our hands on. It took us a long time, but we finally found it and, got to read it.
It was quite interesting to read. One of the things that he starts out is he talks a lot about the difference between an inmate and a convict, and he considers himself a convict, not an inmate. According to him, in the society, in the prison life, an inmate is on a little bit lower scale than is a convict. He believes that being a convict, he's a little more smart, he's a little more wise, and he can push the inmates around. Another thing that's interesting is even though he was married twice to two young girls, he was known to have a homosexual relationship with several different men over a period of time. And we have read those in some of the police statements and some of the confessions. But he also was outwardly very homophobic. And in fact, he was at a funeral and there were some gay couples there, and he just walked up and punched one in the face and started a fight, and just because they were gay. So, he had a really bad side to him. Now, in 1978, he was connected to a homicide in Sequoia County, and a few years later, the victim's cousin is living with him, and she's brutally raped and attacked. And then the partner tries to protect her, and he attacks that partner. Anyway, the victim's cousin ends up pregnant and gives birth to a little girl. Alvin is listed as the father on the birth certificate. So he really isn't father material, and he is in and out of her life vaguely, just here and there, by dropping $5 off or $10 off at a time. But before she's tragically killed at the age of 17, he reconnects with her. And we found a letter that she had written to him, and she was thanking him for offering to help her get a job and helping her find a car to buy. And she just sounded like a real joy. And I think that Alvin really, as much as Alvin could, was capable of, I believe that he really adored her and wanted to have a relationship with her. He just didn't know how to go about it. But then again, like I said, at the age of 17, she was tragically killed in Kibler, Arkansas in a car accident. And I think that really caused him to take a darker turn, if that's even possible, but an even more darker turn when that happened. Now, some of the other writings that we found were fairly interesting too. He wrote about the Morgan Nick kidnapping. He mentioned her by name. He said that Jerry and a guy that lived on the same block, I believe, stayed at their house at times, that they had all gone to Alma. And he had even written a little bit about the background of this third person. And I called up to Locust Grove Police Department and verified that indeed the guy had been arrested for exposing himself, some crimes that might would indicate that he was a sexual deviant. There were some other writings in his house. The house was so bad that it was so hard to really go through everything. But one of the things that he had that he seemed to use a lot was a book. It was on ESP. And Chrissy, you bought me a copy of that, and I've read it. And let me tell you, anybody that can read that book and really enjoy that book, it's beyond me. So we're going to do a separate crime cast on all the homicides that he is connected to following this one. Let's jump ahead to 2007 when a Fort Smith woman goes missing. And they really did try to find her, but they just couldn't. That happened in July of 2007 that she's reported missing. In 2008, there's a house fire. The house fire happens to be at the house of Jerry's. And Jerry lives in the house. Alvin stays with him most of the time. The fire department is called. They show up, the police show up, and Alvin's standing at the fence. Once they assure him that Jerry is in fact deceased, he says, "I have something to tell you. I believe he killed someone in the backyard, and I believe they're buried underneath that car, and I think it might have been maybe a black male." They do move the car, and they find the body of Dorothy Ann Jordan. Now, Dorothy Ann Jordan, that's going to be a whole crime cast, because that's just a very strange and very sad and very tragic story, especially the way that she died. But in the same breath, he says, "And by the way, I have a deed to the property. Just a few days ago, he signed a quitclaim deed over to me, giving me the property." The police exhume the body, take it away, take Jerry away, and there he is. He's given a house. And I don't know how many houses he and his mother have acquired over the years, but he gets a free house. And it just so happened that it was a really convenient time for him because he and his mother were fighting. In fact, his mother had called the police on him and Jerry both for fighting in the streets or being disorderly when they were so intoxicated. So it really worked out well for Alvin. And they never questioned him anymore past the initial question when he told them that he thought that Jerry had killed someone. He told them why he thought that. And they were like, "Thank you. We appreciate all your help." And that seemed to be the end of it until Revamp came along. So our team starts at the very first. And we go back and interview people from all the way back as far as we can on Alvin's past. And we interview both of his wives. Between you and I, we've interviewed both of them. And one of them, the very first wife, we went to her house, and she was just so sweet. And so was her mother. And they were very, very welcoming, and they were just really nice people. So, Christy, do you want to tell the listeners a little bit about what she told us about her short marriage and time with Alvin?
Yeah, I flipped through that book before I gave it to you, and it's not something that I could have read. So I'm glad that you read it, and we have that perspective on what kind of book it is and what kind of person it would have taken to read that religiously. But going to Sally, bless her heart, she's such a sweet lady, and she had a very short, very, very unhappy marriage to Alvin. And her mother knew that, you know, it was a bad situation and eventually helped her get out of it. But Sally was secluded. She said Alvin would go off for 2 or 3 days at a time and just disappear. He would not hold down a job, would not make any money, wouldn't bring anything to the table. Kept her secluded, wouldn't let her meet his friends. He did let her meet his family. And the only person that she could go see with him was his mother at her bar over in Fort Smith. It was off of Garrison, kind of behind the main strip of Garrison, on the backside, you know, of one of the buildings. And then eventually he pulled a gun on her, and that's when she knew she had to get out. So her and her mother figured out a way to get her out of that situation, and I'm really glad that she made it out alive, because a lot of females that he came into contact with were not so lucky. But he always went for younger girls, and she was one of those, you know, very young girls, and I'm just happy she made it out alive.
Yes, when we went and interviewed her, her mother was there also, and she did add quite a bit to the story. She told of how she knew Alvin since Alvin was really small. In fact, Alvin used to come to her door because she didn't live very far from where Alvin grew up. And Alvin would come to her door and ask for food because he and his sister had no one there to cook for them or supply them with food. She talked about she had purchased a brand new mobile home for her daughter, Sally. And Alvin just came in out of the clear blue and asked Sally to get married. They got married, and of course, they had a brand new mobile home, and Sally had a job. Sally was a hard worker. She had a car, and Alvin wouldn't work. He would just lay around, and sometimes she said that Alvin would just stare at her, and it was just the most bizarre stare. It would just make her so uncomfortable. And when he did go off sometimes for a couple of days at a time, he told her he was out metal detecting, and they grew up on Brushy Mountain, and that's in Sequoia County, Oklahoma, and that he would talk about going up towards Stillwell to a wooded area and would metal detect. He always had these great big dreams about finding a buried treasure or winning the lottery. In fact, when we searched his house, we found hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of Powerball tickets and Powerball numbers that he would write down. So I guess his premonitions or his ESP or his great powers just didn't work, because I don't think he ever won anything on any of the lottery tickets. So at the very end of their short marriage, Sally says that he pulls a gun on her. It was a small 38 caliber revolver. And her mother was so concerned that her mother offered him some money to go away. And he took that money and went away. And he never bothered Sally again, fortunately for Sally. Now, since the time that we went and talked to Sally, she has passed away. And I would like to extend our condolences to her family. She was very helpful, she was very cooperative, and she was just so sweet to us while we were there. Now, Alvin remarried again another very young girl around the age of 16 in the early part of 1979. And this was also during a time that he is suspected of committing two homicides. Now, we didn't get the same welcome from her. She really didn't give us a warm and fuzzy feeling. She gave us some information that turned out not to be correct. I would welcome her to join us for a podcast in the future if she would like to correct some of that information. When we first originally reached out to her, she denied that she was who we thought she was. She moved away from this area to another state sometime after the homicides happened in 1979. And I believe she has a lot of information that could put together some pieces of at least one of the homicides, if not two of them in 79. But let's go back to the stories that Alvin wrote about in his writings, in all his notebooks. The one thing that really bothers me is that we have found no correlation to any homicides that he wrote about that he was not involved with, except for the Morgan Nick case. And why he chose that one particular case to write a great deal about, we're still unclear on that. I'm not sure if he truly believed that Jerry had a part in that kidnapping, but that is the only story that we find that he wrote about that there's not some truth in. We have looked at other cases, whether it be Melissa Witt, some of the high-profile cases. He never injected himself in those cases. So why the Morgan Nick case? We're just not really sure. Now, I'm sure that Jerry knew a lot of Alvin's secrets, and I'm sure that Jerry and Alvin shared their stories. But there are still people in the area that do know something about Alvin and his past. Now, one of them is Marion Ray Brown, who is sitting in Sebastian County Jail right now on a double homicide charge. He killed two people in a vacant home over in downtown Fort Smith a couple of years ago, or maybe last year, and so he's sitting in Sebastian County. And another person, now this person really interests me, and we've tried to talk to him and he will not talk, but in 1982, I believe, he wrote a 38-page confession saying that he was a part of the July 19, 1979 homicide. Now, after he writes a 38-page statement saying that he was involved, some of the things in there cannot be proven, and we do not believe them to be the truth, but there is some truth, and it's just like Alvin's stories. With Alvin, there's always a shred of truth in everything he says. You just have to sort through it. So my question is, how did someone like Alvin grow up in Brushy Mountain in Sequoia County and live most of his life, his childhood in Sequoia County, and most of his adult life in Sebastian County, and be the suspect in so many homicides, and yet he always evaded arrest for those homicides? It just amazes me that it can happen in this day and time. Now, there were several officers that tried their best to get him charged with homicide, but it just never happened. But we do know there are people out there, and we do believe there's still a couple of people alive that know some details and maybe could put a connection to this. So we just have to find them, and we're not going to quit. We've been on this case for a long time. We learn more every month about Alvin and some of his associates. And to think that he lived right there in Fort Smith, Arkansas for the last few years of his life, banking next door to you, sitting in a slot machine at the casino next to you. Maybe he lived on the same block as you, and you had no idea that this man was probably connected to several homicides and continued to live a free life right here in Fort Smith, Arkansas. And it makes me wonder quite often how many more Alvins live in our neighborhoods, in our community, in our area, and we're not even aware of it. So we're not through with the Alvin story by far, and there's still a lot more to tell you. And like I said earlier, we're going to go back through each and every one of the cases associated with him. And that would involve Lois Enzi from 1979. It would involve Sandra Davis Carter, Pauline Virginia Harris, Dorothy Ann Jordan, maybe possibly even his compadre, Jerry George. And there's more. So we're going to cover all of those in depth and talk to some of the family members. We have not given up on being able to put some closure to some of these homicides. And I know there's people out there that knew Alvin, other than Marion Ray Brown, like I said, who's sitting in Sebastian County, or Herman Edward Lamb, who Alvin grew up with, and he died in prison serving a life sentence for the murder and rape of a young girl up north, and was also connected to the rape and murder of a young lady in Florida, who was also accused of killing his ex-wife and her small children. There's just unbelievably a large amount of people that grew up on the Brushy Mountain in Sequoia County that ended up being murderers. So if you have any information about Alvin Myers, who lived in Fort Smith, Arkansas, who passed away in 2020, we welcome any comments or any information on the life of Alvin Myers. You can reach us through our Facebook page of Revamp, Remember Every Victim and Missing Person, or on the web at www.rememberEveryVictim.com.